So if you're someone who gets really bloaty, really gassy on fibers or plant products, there might be two things. One, you're either feeding the wrong fish in the fish tank, right? They're overgrown, there's an overgrowth, or you lack the diversity to digest them. So you could simply try reducing and going maybe more to an animal base and seeing how you feel.
Hello, friend. Oh my goodness, how is it already April? I'm so glad that you've carved out a little bit of time to hang out with me today. I've spent a good amount of time in Canada, and with the change in weather, just my body is having a little bit of a hard time catching up, and I'm just a little bit sniffly. But I'm so thankful. Something that would normally knock me down for a couple of weeks doesn't knock me down anymore. And that's why we do what we do here, is to consistently think about how our diet, movement, water intake, air quality is going to impact our health long term. And I'm so thankful. I'm so thankful. Years ago, this kind of thing would have knocked me down for weeks at a time and really affected me. And I can just be so appreciative that my body is a lot stronger than it was even last year. And so even though we're a little bit snuffly today, we're moving forward with today's episode. We're chatting with Josh, who's an ex-paramedic and a holistic nutritionist. He actually went to the same school that I did, specializing in gut health. It was the success of his clients that have made complex disease states previously thought to be impossible that got him connected to some of the world's most renowned doctors. Since then, he has been recruited to the Priority Health Academy as a medical lecturer, helping educate doctors on the holistic approach to gut health and complex digestive issues. You can find Josh by going to his website, gutsolution.ca, and he also came up with a recent reversing Crohn's and colitis naturally program, and I've included the link in the show notes today. So if you're unsure of where the show notes are, click around on however you're accessing today's episode. And if you're still not sure, go to ketodietpodcast.com and all the links for today's episode will be on that page. Oh my goodness, Crohn's and colitis are one of the bigger issues that affect many, many, many of my clients, and I know many of you. And so I'm so glad that we get to come at you with this information about how to reduce inflammation in the gut. We're talking about chemicals, infections, EMF, liver, how to overcome with supplement, diet, lifestyle protocols, just a really good conversation if you're currently struggling with inflammation in your gut. So let's get to our conversation with Josh.
Hey, my name is Leanne Vogel. I'm fascinated with helping women navigate how to eat, move, and care for their bodies using a low-carb diet. I'm a small-town holistic nutritionist turned three-time international best-selling author turned functional medicine practitioner, offering telemedicine services around the globe to women looking to better their health and stop second-guessing themselves. I'm here to teach you how to wade through the wellness noise to get to the good stuff that'll help you achieve your goals. We're supporting your low-carb life beyond the if it fits your macros conversation. Hormones, emotions, relationship to your body, workouts, letdowns, motivation, blood work, detoxing, metabolism. I'm providing the tools to put your motivation into action. Think of it like quality time with your bestie mixed with a little med school so you're empowered at your next doctor visit. Get ready to be challenged and encouraged while you learn about your body and how to care for it better. This is the Keto Diet Podcast.
Hey, Josh, how's it going?
So good. Sorry, I just took a sip of coffee as you asked me
that
question.
I know, I saw that.
It's like the waitress coming around, like, how are you doing, as you put a shovel food into your mouth. But on that note, I'm great, man. Good to see you again.
Yeah, you too. We just recorded me on your show yesterday and now you on mine today. Like I was saying before we pressed record, it's so rare that I get to see somebody back to back like this. So it's such a treat.
15 hours apart. So.
Exactly. So I started with your official bio, but in a couple of words, can you tell us what lights you up and why you got started in this work?
Oh, geez. I will summarize it as best I can. My entire life has just been happy accidents of falling forward. And I'm so grateful I've been pushed in these directions. I don't believe it was me. I believe there's divine intervention at play. You know, I used to be a paramedic, fell in love with it. And then through circumstances, I became a personal trainer. And one of the women, one of my first clients in my early 20s, 57 years old, 17 pills of insulin for breakfast, 9 pills of insulin for bedtime. She had a CPAP machine, high blood pressure, and she was on the disability list at work. And after 2 years of working together in strength training and nutrition and basics of sleep improvement, age 59, she was off all medications but two. And I threw into her first powerlifting competition in the Canadian raw powerlifting division, where she broke a world record. And so that to me was just the power of the human body. Not long after that, I was at a trade show. Someone was talking about the gut and microbiome and birth and life and death and its role in the human body and health. My jaw was on the floor for 30 minutes. Like I was working. And I told the lady I was working with, said, Lorna, I gotta watch this. She says, go, you go ahead. And I was like, that's what I'm doing for the rest of my life. I fell in love immediately. And so by need and people coming to see me with worse and worse and just figuring things out with medicine logic, I fell in love with the space of Crohn's and colitis. And this is what I'm doing now for probably forever.
That's amazing. And I think too, did you have that moment where you were like, everything that I learned as a paramedic, like, was there a crumbling of the world that you had built up in your mind of like, hold on a minute, but I learned this way. Did you have that kind of moment?
Sort of. So paramedics is different than, say, traditional medicine, going to like be a medical doctor. Because in paramedics, what we do is we study emergencies and we study symptomatology, pathology, and we'll call it emergentology, I guess. It's just the breakdown of how to keep somebody alive for 20 to 30 minutes till you get to the hospital. And that was it. So it was a lot of emergency use medication. I shouldn't say that was it. It was quite thorough. My IV binder for just acid-base balance and IV fluids was, you know, 500 pages. Then we did my aeromedical. So every 1,000 feet, things change. Like, it's a whole lot. But there was translation in the way of my medical background. But yes, I had to relearn what I thought I understood about everything.
Yeah, I bet. And we go through those rebirths, I feel like, throughout your career. I'm sure you've had those too, of learning more about the gut and bacteria and just like, whoa, wait a minute, I'm seeing the world totally different. And that's what I love about the space, because you can constantly learn. The body is so complex.
Absolutely. And it's really interesting, because I often say that my paramedics did nothing for me. It was an amazing career, but to where I'm at today, it's such a different field. But the medical understanding, the knowledge, the biology, the pathophysiology, that carried over. I mean, frankly, I breezed through school. I hardly studied once or twice for the entire program. It just made sense to me. And I flew by top of my class. So, I mean, sometimes you just get stuff, but those skills, the education in some ways translates. But like you're alluding to, the application of the knowledge, vastly different. I mean, I lecture at a functional medicine academy with medical doctors who want to learn functional medicine. And they're blown away, like, this makes no sense to me. And they're medical doctors. So it is a vastly different education from conventional medicine to functional, for sure.
Yeah. So I want to start off our conversation kind of broad scope, the gut, bacteria. And then I really want to drill down, since you love helping individuals with Crohn's and colitis, I'd like to end there and kind of go through what's happening, why it's happening, those sorts of things. So can we start off with, how important is gut bacteria, and like, what do they do? Why do we care about this conversation?
My rebuttal to that is that, what doesn't gut bacteria do? And I mean that in the sense where I quite literally compare it to the importance of our DNA. You know, we think our DNA makes us, but I'll tell you, Leanne, we are born, right? There's microbes everywhere, bacteria everywhere, these ecosystems, these microbiomes. We are born 99% human cells, 1% microbes that we get in utero from the placenta. We die 90% microbes and 10% human. And so the vastness of our microbiome, so like these neighborhoods around the body, the gut, the skin, the armpits, the groin, rectal, vaginal, nasal, oral, they're everywhere and they all communicate together. And our gut microbiome is responsible for digestion, absorption. It's responsible for our immune systems, hormonal regulation, genetic expression. I mean, it does everything, produces certain vitamins, and there's no shortage of what it does to us or for us. I mean, that microbiome houses and communicates with every aspect of your nervous system and immune system. And 90% of your neurotransmitters, your dopamine, epinephrine, serotonin, norepinephrine, a lot of these things are made within the gut and the digestive system. Your immune cells, your B cells and T cells, they're matured and grown inside of your gut. And so your gut is the epicenter of everything. And if we don't have a healthy gut, we literally open the door. Like, all diseases begin in the leaky gut. All diseases, with an emphasis, capital, bold, underline. And so to say, what does it do? It's a much shorter thing to answer. What doesn't it do? It doesn't fly. It doesn't breathe fire. but it basically does everything else, you know?
I love that we went to the breathe fire. That's great. I love it. So common issues of North Americans today, I would say, is like chronic inflammation, obesity, mental health issues. How do these relate to the gut if it's involved in everything?
Well, inflammation is an easy one to understand. So let's talk about that, for example. Inflammation is a byproduct of toxins, effectively, or byproducts of your cells or your immune cells creating exhaust, we'll say, right? Everybody knows when they work out that muscle soreness we get, you get this exhaust or this lactic acid produced by your muscles. Well, your cells, your bacteria, they all produce these byproducts. So put some context to this. Imagine you have a fishbowl and you have a single fish inside the fishbowl, right? That fish is your probiotic. That's your microbes or the microbiome. The more fish you have this community, that's your microbiome. The prebiotic that we give them, or the food, is the fish food. And just like you eat and you poop, so do your fish. And so when they eat prebiotics, the probiotic of the fish poops. Now, in a healthy ecosystem, that fish poop actually gets reused. It doesn't just pile up on the ocean floor. It gets reused and upcycled, and the shrimp or the crabs or something's going to eat it. I'm not a marine biologist, but you get the idea. And so something will eat that and upcycle it. And so in a closed, contained environment like a fish tank, imagine you throw in a bunch of piranhas and some blood and a little shark. Well, suddenly that whole ecosystem gets thrown out of balance and there's blood in the water. Or you have a billion fish and now there's so much fish poop, the ecosystem can't upcycle it. What we end up with inside of the gut is all these byproducts where there's extra, quote, fish poop or extra exhaust created by your bacteria. If you have the wrong ones in or out of balance, they no longer fit the needs of the life cycle of that ecosystem. You have too much fish poop, too many big fish. They're eating the good fish. And these byproducts, it's only one cell from your small intestine to your bloodstream, your lymphatics, two cells in the large intestine where things pass through. Once they circulate around your bloodstream and lymphatic system, that's a superhighway to your brain, to your joints, to every digit, to every organ. If you have this exhaust or this fish poop, so to speak, going places that it shouldn't in amounts that your body can't get rid of, your immune system has to try to clean that up. In your immune system, to heal you, inflammation is a byproduct. And so if you have issues in the gut, basically those exhausts leak out through the system, travel around the body, your immune system has to clean up, leading to inflammation. And so if you're someone who has arthritis, for example, quote, in the family, you are genetically predisposed maybe to expressing inflammation via your joints or having deficiencies in your thyroid, but it's the inflammation causing these problems or this genetic expression. And so that's one, that's kind of the base level. Where if we look at obesity, for example, really cool mice study. Well, they actually took some mice, they had a control group, and then they, of course, had their experimental group. The control group, they put them on calorie deficits, they put them on exercise programs, and they found that these mice, of course, lost weight on a calorie deficit. They also found that the mice who were on were exercising had these metabolic benefits, hormonal benefits, but they destroyed and disrupted the gut bacteria of the experimental mice, who did not lose any weight or lost very little weight on a calorie deficit, for example, or did not get the same benefits from the exercise that the healthy gut bacteria mice did. So we know your bacteria even play a role in metabolic processes, in exercise, hormonal regulation, all of it. But what's more interesting is that mice eat feces, right? That's just part of their life cycle and their diet, like rabbits. Well, the obese mice who are unable to lose weight ate the feces of the good of the healthy mice. They found that they had then lost weight and without exercising were able to acquire some of the benefits or the metabolic benefits of exercise by consuming the healthy bacteria of the control group of mice. And so we know that your weight loss, your health, it all comes back to bacteria. It is everything. And you asked me about one more, but that's inflammation and obesity. I forget the third.
Mental health.
Yes. Well, it's tied into all those. Same answer.
Okay. Amazing. One of the pieces that you mentioned, and I want to clarify, what is a prebiotic for people that don't know? I know probiotics are quite common, but you mentioned prebiotics in that amazing illustration of marine, which I love because I'm an ocean person. So thanks for that. But the prebiotic piece, what is that?
So prebiotics are just things that your gut bacteria utilize as food. They can break down, digest, and absorb. And so you might see prebiotic fibers like inulin. You might see those in your fruits and vegetables, like these soluble fibers, these things that can be consumed and broken down really. So that's your fish food, so to speak. And when they utilize these, they turn them into certain byproducts. For example, short-chain fatty acids, which are things we need as energy sources. They're immune modulating, they're anti-inflammatory, they help balance out your ecosystem, right? They keep things clean. So you get your byproducts like butyrate, propionate, these things, and they're just your fish poop. And prebiotics are your fish food, which your probiotic fish turn into postbiotic fish poop, so to speak.
Love it. Okay, so generally speaking, do you have concepts, ideas, suggestions around nutrition, supplements, exercise to benefit gut health? Like if a lady that's listening right now is like, my gut feels pretty good. Like I think I'm pretty healthy. Nothing is really amiss. How do I just maintain proper gut health? I've not met one of these individuals, but
they're rare to come across.
If they were to come across, what are some of the ways that we can just maintain gut health, benefit our gut health when there isn't like ginormous things going on in our health?
The simple stuff is easy. You know, I look at food and it's interesting because we talked about this last night, which on an episode I'll be releasing on my show, that I'm nonpartisan to diet specifically. You know, some people go the carnivore way. Some people go the vegan. So you got this polar opposite spectrum. There's everything in between. I do believe in general that that fruits for sure, some vegetables can be very beneficial. The things your bacteria can use. We can see them in studies, how they utilize and help growth of bacteria. Certain strains of bacteria do really well with these fibers. So somebody who wants to maintain, keeping a air quote, loose term, balanced diet, I'm a big fan of animal based personally, with a secondary of fruits and vegetables, if you like those. But it's really interesting because what we're seeing more and more in studies of gut bacteria, if we're simply maintaining and you're doing well with these types of diets, just do what you're already doing because you have the bacterial split or the bacterial profile to digest and break down certain things. But through studies of different countries and different locations, be it rural or urban, we know or we can surmise that Americans, North Americans specifically, our gut bacteria, we start to lose a lot of our diversity and our ability to break down fibers. So if you're someone who gets really bloaty, really gassy on fibers or plant products, there might be two things. One, you're either feeding the wrong fish in the fish tank, right? They're overgrown, there's an overgrowth, or you lack the diversity to digest them. So you could simply try reducing and going maybe more to an animal base and seeing how you feel, right? So there's a bit of a different spectrum in there. But in general, if you're feeling good already, you want to maintain your gut, keep doing what you're doing. But I do have two rules. My first one is that we eat until we are happy, not till we're bloated and distended. Right? We have to make sure like how we eat. We talk about what to eat. We really talk about how to eat. Like eat well, eat clean, of course, but sit down, take a couple of breaths, chew your food, put yourself out of fight and flight, like seven kids in the car, shuttle them in, go to soccer, swallow food like a pelican, don't even chew. This is really hard on the gut. And so we have to take our time, take a couple of breaths. Like when grandma said chew 30 times, she knew what she was doing. It stimulates digestive juices and motility and helps the gut. So how we eat is just as important as what we eat. Number two, if it's something on the environmental working group's dirty dozen list, either buy it organic or don't buy it at all. That's my rules.
Yeah, the chewing is a thing that I've been working on for years and years. My husband is so good at this. He'll sit down with his meal and he'll like look at it and breathe it in a couple of times. And it's been so annoying to me. Like, dude, just eat. And he's like, I swear this makes me feel better if I just take my time. And you're so right. Just those simple steps of taking your time with food has made a big, big difference for myself. So I can attest to that for sure.
Yeah, it's a big one. And, you know, there's something to be said as well for the steps of food, grabbing your food, touching your food, preparing your food, cutting it with your hands, cooking, smelling, all of these things stimulate digestion in their own way, right? You can't just open your computer and bam, get to work. You have to open it up, boot it up, log in. If it's an older computer, it takes a second to get moving, right? The same thing with our digestion. We can't just swallow like a pelican without chewing. We have to sit, touch the food, feel it, cook it, smell it. These things stimulate digestive processes. And that's the base level. I don't care where you are on the gut spectrum of a little bit of bloat to bleeding, but those are necessary stages for everyone.
And such a good follow through to the bleeding conversation. Let's talk about Crohn's, colitis,
First off, what are these and how are they different?
So Western medicine has spent a long time separating all these diseases. Crohn's and colitis are inflammatory conditions classified under the umbrella of IBD or inflammatory bowel disease. Now, Crohn's and colitis are different based on location and depth. And what I mean by that is colitis or ulcerative colitis tends to be in patches, whether it's one segment, maybe it's 15 centimeters of what we call proctitis. So it's inflammation in the lower rectum in one long strand. And maybe it can come up in other places. You might have it proctitis and inflammation near the sigmoid, for example, like that right-sided colon. So we have these little bits, but it's very surface level. Think of it like a scrape or like a little bit of a blister that you might get on your heel. Whereas Crohn's disease, for example, comes in what we call these Peyer's patches. So it's patchy, like spots, more like a Dalmatian, and it's very deep, like full thickness tissues. So it goes through all the layers or many layers, and you're more prone to cancers or what we call fistulas or tunneling, these inflammatory processes, which can be highly toxic, fester infection, and lead to many, many different types of diseases. So in the same breath, they're the same. In one's just worse than the other, but diagnostically speaking in Western medicine, they call them different because of different boxes. But in my practice, as far as I'm concerned, and this is why I believe we've been so successful with reversing it, like 93-95% is because as far as I'm concerned, it's the same thing as IBS. It's just worse. And that's a generalization people are going to hate me for. As we go on, I'll explain, but that's my ideology behind IBD and IBS.
Okay, amazing. IBS is a quite common diagnosis. I know many doctors have told me over the course of my lifetime that I have this. Turns out it was a parasite infection. Super, super helpful on that. What is the best testing, in your opinion, to know that this is happening? Like, I know that we can see an inflammatory dysbiotic pattern in the GI map. Is that enough along with calprotectin? And like, what are you looking at to determine whether or not somebody has some sort of inflammatory bowel condition?
First one is symptoms. You know, in Western medicine, they go, okay, you got your symptoms. Maybe there's mucus or blood in the stool. There's extreme pain a lot of the time. Increased urgency is very common, if not in 99% of cases, at least before it's been treated. So we see these conditions, right? Maybe it's loose stool. Maybe you're having diarrhea. I've seen people 40 and 50 times a day. I've seen people where it's maybe five. It just really depends on the severity spectrum. So diagnostic criteria, Western medicine will check your calprotectin. Now, there's five types of white blood cells. And one of them, these neutrophils, the byproduct is calprotectin. And so it just shows if your calprotectin is 5,000, okay, there's a lot of white blood cells in the area. So we know you're inflamed. They might do a scope. Most commonly, they will. Well, they'll do a colonoscopy or an endoscopy to see, okay, where are you inflamed and how severe is it? How severe are the ulcerations? And then they might go through and do some blood work. They'll check for inflammatory markers. And sometimes they stop there. They go, okay, you've met the criteria. Calprotectin's high. We've visualized it and your symptoms are awful. Therefore, you have this disease. And so we say, okay, it's genetic. It's autoimmune. It's unknown cause. We call it idiopathic. And there's nothing we can do. So take some drugs and hopefully you get to keep your colon. That's the Western approach. When you're asking about how we classify in functional medicine, I could care less. I don't need a colonoscopy. I don't need a diagnosis. I need to know, what are your symptoms? Loose stool, firm stool, or no stool, right? Are you having blood and mucus? Okay, where's your pain? What makes it better? What makes it worse? We go into this whole history, right? Doctors go, here's your symptoms. The next step is diagnosis. The next step is drugs. They go to the right. We go to the left now. We go, okay, you got your symptoms. When did this start? How severe is it? What makes it better? What makes it worse? Tell me the first time you had a little upset. And that's how we look at IBD. Very, very differently, because we're not trying to box it diagnostically or clinically to prescribe something to suppress your symptoms or manage the symptoms. We want to figure out and unwind the chain of events that led to this inflammation.
We know that we lose muscle as we age and that this loss massively affects our ability to function. Like, I'm talking basic tasks here. Muscle is important for protecting our joints and also keeping our metabolism revving. Basically, you want muscle. And unfortunately, a lot of us just don't prioritize muscle maintenance or see it as an importance. And you may also be cringing at the idea of going to the gym and being able to maintain that muscle consistently. Yes, active moving is super good, and there's really nothing like it when it comes to the mood boost of pumping iron. So So when I share about Urolithin A, I am not saying just to do this and you can maintain your muscle without movement. Well, like I am saying that because Urolithin A does do that, but I think pairing Urolithin A with exercise is likely the best path forward. So I started taking a product called MitoPure to boost my performance and improve muscular strength. And MitoPure has 500 milligrams per serving of Urolithin A, a postbiotic shown to have major benefits to significantly increasing muscle strength and endurance with no other change in lifestyle. Yes, you heard that right. I just said that it has major benefits to significantly increase muscle strength and endurance with no other change to lifestyle. It gives your body the energy it needs to optimize its cellular power grid through boosted mitochondrial health without changes to lifestyle or diet. Now imagine what it could do with your low-carb diet and a walking goal or a lifting goal a couple of times per week. It took me a long time, like a couple of months, to introduce MitoPure to my day because it's so strong. Every time I took it, I almost had too much energy, so I really had to titrate up. MitoPure is the first product to offer a precise dose of Urolithin A to upgrade mitochondrial function, increase cellular energy, and improve muscle strength and endurance. They've created three ways to get your daily dose of 500 milligrams of Urolithin A in their product MitoPure. They've got a delicious vanilla protein powder that combines muscle building protein with the cellular energy of MitoPure. Now, this product does contain whey protein. And then they have a berry powder that easily mixes into smoothies or just about any drink. This is dairy free. And finally, the soft gels, which is what I prefer because it's just easier. This is also dairy free. I love the starter pack idea though. If you can handle the dairy, the three forms of MitoPure to play around with which one is your favorite, top notch. So Timeline, the creators of MitoPure, is putting together a sweet little offer for you, 10% off your first order. So if you go to timelinenutrition.com/KDP and use the code KDP, you'll get 10% off your order. Again, that's timelinenutrition.com/KDP. I recommend trying their starter pack with all three formats and picking out your best format. Again, that's timelinenutrition.com/KDP. What are some of the issues that you see when you say what makes it better, what makes it worse? What are the common things that you're seeing in that regard?
Gluten's a big one. And there's a lot of people, they say gluten doesn't bother them. On the other hand, I've had people tell me that Taco Bell doesn't bother them. I'm like, you're medicated and your body won't have responses because it's suppressing inflammation. But gluten, alcohol, sugar, and oftentimes really harsh fibers, like your cruciferous, like your cabbage and broccoli, really dense, scratchy. Like I use these kitty cat claws when I say the word scratchy, but that's the idea. Things that like scrape the insides of the intestines can be like sandpaper. Those things are always going to be bad. I really avoid them for the most part. I try to go to soft, squishy, like picture you're feeding a baby, right? You might give them fish or you might give them ground turkey or ground chicken, like ground meats. You might give them soft vegetables like carrots and sweet potatoes. Those tend to be better, but sugars, alcohols, gluten, scratchy foods, anything refined, anything processed, those are always things I reduce. Because I look at this inflammation, my analogy I use is like the heel of a shoe, right? If you're going for a walk in a new pair of shoes and you forget your socks, it gets red and blisters and bleeds. It gets more severe. You'll wear down to the bone if the shoes are small enough and the socks aren't there and you're walking long enough, you'll wear it right down to nothing. And so we have to look at this. What things are going to irritate you? Well, a little bit of sand in the shoe, not a big deal. If you got a blister, it's sandpaper. Right? And it's a little bit of pebble in the shoe. If it's small enough, you can get away with it. You have a healthy heel. But the more blood you have in that foot, the more that rock's going to irritate you. And so something as small as maybe, you know, eating a hot dog, not ideal by any means, but if you have a really healthy gut, you can handle it. You might get a little bit bloated or feel nothing. But if you have Crohn's disease, it's enough to set you into a full-blown flare and send you off the rails with blood for a week and a half. And so these are the things we have to watch for. And it's often based on severity. But I treat everyone every time like they come in as if they have the most severe and actual autoimmune cases. But I don't believe all cases are autoimmune.
And so what's the standard method of care? You touched on that a little bit, just throwing medications at the issue. and not really getting to the root cause, not using diet, nutrition, some of the pieces that we're going to talk about, what are the standard things that individuals will generally be prescribed or told to do?
Well, there's typically a pecking order. So get your first stuff where they might give prednisone, put you on a little taper for a little bit, some kind of corticosteroid to taper you down and see how you feel. And if you're flaring up and flaring down, because it can't leave you on those for very long, they might try you on something like mesalamine. It's a very common one, or mesalazine. That's going to be either oral or suppository. If those don't work, they might try some other drugs. They might move you on to what we call biologics, which are going to be your immunosuppressives or your monoclonal antibodies. These are medications that suppress the immune system. So you're going to have your Stelaras or your Entyvios or something else. And they basically move you up in classification of severity of medication all the way until you're on like new ones, like what we call like JAK inhibitors. These ones are really quite severe. They basically will block certain cytokine pathways, but you get your new ones like Xeljanz, for example, where I would argue they're still relatively experimental. And the thing about these medications, in order to pass FDA approval, they have to have a 30% efficacy rate. 30%, that's it, 30. And if they go, yeah, well, 30% of cases have been suppressed or managed, and now we got your calprotectin down, that's the standard of care, really. It's your calprotectin is down, so the white blood cell activity is reduced, therefore we're beating this disease. Well, the white blood cell activity is reduced. You got a hostage in your house and you put tape over the mouth. They're like, look, they've stopped screaming. They're happy to be here. It doesn't work that way. They still want to get out. There's still inflammation. You just suppress the response that it's trying to give you. You put tape over your body's mouth. And so you don't have calprotectin because you just shut off the signal. That's not beating the disease. It's shutting it up.
Yeah. Yes. I couldn't agree with you more. When it comes to the root causes, I know the answer to this question, but I'll kind of like line you up. I guess they're not addressing root causes, right? And what are some of the, like, amazing. What are some of the root cause issues? Like, you touched a little bit on diet. Are we talking like nutrient deficiencies, chemicals, infections? Like, what are some of the common things that you're seeing as a root cause under these inflammatory conditions?
I love that you bring up root cause. Thanks for setting that up for a home run here. I want to throw an analogy to the root cause, because the reason I want to preface this, if anybody is struggling with inflammatory bowel disease, to this stage, you've probably been told by your doctor, like I said, it's autoimmune or idiopathic, meaning there's no known cause. It's genetic, meaning you just got dealt a bad hand. It's autoimmune. There's nothing we can do about autoimmunity. And so you're on your own. But there has to be a root. We know inflammation is there to heal you. Right? Imagine you go to the hospital, king of analogies today, you have a thorn stuck in your hand and it's there and it's bleeding and it's swollen and it's pussy. And you go to the doctor and they're like, wow, you're really inflamed. Let's give you some ointment for the pain. You look at him like he's got three heads. You turn it sideways, like pull the thorn out, because we know clearly you're inflamed because something is in there. Inflammation isn't a random response. You'd expect them to pull out the thorns. We have to ask, what is the thorn in your gut? What is the root that's driving the inflammation? What is your body trying to heal you from? Most commonly in IBD, we see a combination of things. So for the listeners, we call that multifactorial, meaning there's many layers. So imagine we're peeling back one layer at a time on a cake, right? The cake dish is going to be dirty until we can clean the whole thing, but you can't just lop the cake off. You got to go one layer at a time. So oftentimes we see things like mold. That's very, very common. We see a lot of candida bacteria or yeast, which is really a fungi as it overgrows. And so we see those as big issues probably 90% of the time, or at least a major involvement. We see parasites. We see Clostridia bacteria. And not just Clostridium difficile, not just C. diff infections, but different strains of Clostridia. So for example, if you're someone who eats bone broth or collagen powder or takes a calcium supplement, you find it makes you bleed, you probably got a Clostridia issue, because they like that. They overfeed and their exhaust, right, causes that fish poop, so to speak, causes issues in the lining. So we can figure out these roots by going down layers. And then we have to go back to the basics, of course. Like we talked about stress. You've already got an issue. What things are feeding the problem? You have a blister on your heel in the shoe. Is the shoe too small? Is it also wet? Is there sand inside the shoe? Like, what other things are contributing to the wear and tear process? We have to look at those as well. But big ones are going to be fungus, mold, parasites, Clostridia. Second to that, Lyme disease is relatively common. We've seen some of that now post 2020. don't know if we can say the jab word on your show here without getting blocked
out. Yeah, we can. Let's go.
COVID and COVID vaccines are the worst. I've seen dozens of cases of people who got their jabs or got COVID and developed autoimmunity. So we've thrown them on, say, the McCullough protocol with your natokinase, bromelain, NAC, curcumin, and even post-infectious or post-jab. There's been recommendations for ivermectin usage as well. So all kinds of layers that we have to go back. And unfortunately, it's evolving. Right. I mean, we can get down to root causes and contributing factors. We can talk pesticide usage, how they've gone up 2 to 4 times in quantity and 19 times in the amount or the variety, the quality that we have. We can talk about the roots of IBD on the rise from 1990, 1.5 to 3 million cases globally from 1990. Estimates are 8 million today. So in 30 years, we've like 3 to 5x'd our cases, but 50% of those, Leanne, in North America is 5% of the global population. They have 50% of the world's cases of IBD, coincidentally have the worst diets, the worst pesticide usage, the most antibiotic usage, the works. And yet we say, well, they're just fine because we test these things in individual studies by themselves, not compounded or stacked. Like, it's just an ass backwards way of looking at it to say this disease is idiopathic. If we've 5x'd our cases in 30 years, you're going to tell me there's no known cause. I'm going to tell you, you better figure it out pretty fast. Or start guessing and do your best because the world's going downhill. Sorry, I got on a tangent there.
So good. Okay, I have so many questions. First is collagen. Hold up, hold on a minute. There are probably a lot of women listening where their ears just perked up with the collagen. Could you explain the collagen piece in feeding C. diff or causing issues? Can you just go into that a little bit further? Because I know that many of my listeners consume a significant amount of collagen.
Yeah. So it's not that they feed issues per se, but collagen is not a huge source of calcium, for example, but there are certain proteins in it that Clostridia bacteria can consume. If you're eating like bone broths or calcium-based supplementation and you're getting bleeding, we can basically confirm, yeah, you got a Clostridia issue. So what we're looking for are certain things that things in your body will consume. And we can look at these as root causes of being a problem. You know, if somebody has, for example, cyclical issues, especially women when they're menstruating, we know that estrogen is tied to your immune system. And so if your cycle correlates with your bowel disease, we have these flare-ups or every 2 to 4 or 6 weeks, for example, or weirder yet, on a full moon, we can look at these as being correlative. If you're somebody who comes in with those symptoms and you happen to have dry hands and dry feet, you push around your belly button, especially like the lower right side, and you got some pain, you probably got parasites going on, in which of course we can look to you for your functional blood work to see what is going on the inside. And can we confirm the presence of parasites through blood because it's hard to get in stool. And so we can put these things together and figure out what is some of the primary drivers or the layers to this cake we have to peel back to get you better. Certain food or certain nutrients will feed certain things. If you come in and you have cravings like crazy for sugar and carbs or alcohol or starches, or you go through these antifungal protocols and you get like big, big headaches, for example, your doctor tries you on a nystatin or fluconazole and you have migraines, you feel like a zombie, you probably got a fungal issue and a drainage issue because you're not... Picture bacteria like a balloon full of confetti. You pop it, confetti goes everywhere. We got to clean that up. That's your liver and your blood. They clean up that junk. And so what happens if you can't clean that up, it fatigues the body. And so we can look at certain byproducts of certain instances, what you're eating, what medications you might be taking. We can go down and figure out all day long the roots and contributing factors to your disease, right? There's many, many different layers. I've actually distilled down. If you're doing video on this call as well, but I do have a Venn diagram that I basically distilled down the last 10 years of my life to show here are the roots of IBD and here are the three ways it becomes autoimmune.
That is so fun. We're not recording the video, but that is so cool. I want to see it.
I have it here. It's become a note page. But this is my Venn diagram. Okay. So here's what we've got. On the top, the number one cause that we see of causing, or these are the three causes for causing IBD. The first one is going to be toxins. And so that can be environmental toxins. It can be microbial toxins. It can be mold or mycotoxins, right? Your body, they cause changes or what we call pleomorphing in the morphology or the structure of your gut bacteria, which can lead to inflammation and immune conditions. So toxins are a big one. Toxins in our food, toxins in our water, microplastics. It's all layers. The second one is microbial imbalances, which of course toxins can cause. And so if we look at these microbial imbalances, is it fungus or candida? Is it overgrowth or undergrowth? Are there opportunistic bacteria? I see people coming in, the doctor says you have no C. diff, But on an oat test, for example, plus food testing, they come back positive for Clostridia bacteria. So these microbial imbalances, maybe it's parasites, any microbe can cause a problem. The last one on the bottom we have here is diet and nutrient deficiencies. And so if you're deficient in nutrients, like micronutrients, your vitamins, minerals, even waters, they contribute to layers of the problem where your body can no longer defend itself. It doesn't have, like if your house is on fire and you live on a well water, you have enough water in your well to shower, to bathe, to do your dishes, to cook, like all the basics you need. Well, nutrients are the water of your body in this scenario. If your house is on fire, you need to dip extra into that well. We need to deplete your nutrients. Well, your house is also on fire, so you're not absorbing nutrients as well either. You end up in the red. And so now you're in a major deficit. Your body starts to pull them from everywhere. All these nutrients, like from your teeth. People with gut issues, it's common to have like sensitive teeth because you're drawing minerals from your teeth, or osteoporosis, you're pulling it from your bones. Or pregnant women, right? It's like when you're having a baby, if you're nutrient deficient, you get brain fog because we need all that EPA, those omegas, for example, to develop a healthy baby. And so women will get this brain fog. Like your body pulls nutrients from where it needs to. So our three causes are toxins, microbial imbalances, and poor diet or nutrient deficiencies. And there's nothing outside of those umbrellas really that contributes. And so the thing is now, people go, well, it's genetic. Well, genetics are expressive. They turn up and down like a volume knob, right? You can make them much worse by making them severe. For example, if you have toxins in the system and nutrient deficiencies, toxins can turn up genetic expression. And through the study of nutrigenomics, or genetic expression based on nutrients in or out, we can turn those up or down. So that's where your toxins and nutrients cross over. Now, if you look at microbial imbalances, back to that one, and diet nutrient deficiencies, well, together, they can create leaky gut as well can toxins. But once you have leaks in the gut, that contributes to autoimmunity. And of course, the last autoimmune trigger or the last autoimmune contributor is a trigger, being stress. Pregnancy, moving, death of a loved one, family, going to medical school, like long stressors, being in a bad relationship. These contribute to the wear and tear, turning up the genetic expression, for example, and this is what makes things autoimmune. So if triggers, genetics, and leaky gut contribute to autoimmune, the three things that exacerbate those are going to be your toxins, your microbial imbalances, and your nutrient deficiencies. And between these, it's a great Venn diagram. I can send you a copy to put in the show notes, but this is how autoimmune inflammatory bowel disease develops. But just because you have bowel disease, based on those six things we just talked about, it may not be autoimmune. In fact, I find in my experience, in most cases, it's not, which means there's hope. And even if it is, we can control that.
Oh, that sound of magic. I just shook a packet of Element Recharge watermelon salt in your ear. And if you're anything like me, you just salivated because you know that your body needs copious amounts of sodium to maintain your ketogenic diet. Now, sodium is the body's great solvent. It's a primary alkalizer. It's regulated by the adrenal glands, aka aldosterone, actually. It regulates the blood pressure. It increases heart rate. It maintains fluid balance and maintains pH levels. It also influences stomach acid levels. So if you don't have enough sodium, you're not going to be making stomach acid. You're going to be welcoming in parasites and all those sorts of things. I say to my clients, think of your stomach acid like the initial wall that stops all those little critters from getting in. Sodium also influences cellular membrane permeability and so much more. In addition, it's not just sodium you're going to find in Element Electrolytes. You're also going to find 200 milligrams of potassium. Did you know that the average body needs about 3,000 milligrams of potassium per day? I challenge you today to look at your food log and see how little potassium you're eating on a daily basis. This is a primary solvent mineral. Just like sodium, it's an intracellular mineral. It regulates the blood pressure with sodium. It maintains fluid balance, pH levels of the body. It influences cellular membrane permeability. It sensitizes the cell to thyroid hormone. So if you're having issues with your thyroid, the number one mineral you need to be thinking about is potassium. It also influences nerve conduction of the heart. It lowers heart rate, dilates arteries, and so many good things. So I just went through two of the three main minerals in Element Electrolytes. Now, what I love about Element Electrolytes is the flavor. They're really salty with 1,000 milligrams of sodium per serving. This stuff is good. I have it in my water bottle beside me. Now, I've been sharing Element for at least 2 years. I love this stuff, and Element has been so gracious with the offer for our listeners. You get a sample pack with any of your orders on Element. That's 8 single serving packets free with any Element order. This is a great way to try all 8 flavors and decide that watermelon salt is your favorite. No, I'm just kidding. It's my personal favorite. I love it. Same with the raspberry one, but you get to try them and let me know what you think. You can get yours by going to drinklmnt.com/KDP. This deal is only available through my link. You must go to drinklmnt.com/KDP to get your single serving packets for free with any order. Try it totally risk-free, and if you don't like it, share it with a salty friend and they will give you your money back, no questions asked. You really have nothing to lose and everything to gain, so you can shake your Element along with me. I always carry it around in my purse. I couldn't imagine my keto life without it. You're so good at describing things and I really appreciate it. And I'm sorry, guys, that you can't see it. I will definitely ask for the image so we can include it in the show notes, because that's so, so good. And I love that you have a copy at your desk. That's awesome. The cake layers, like the peeling back, is a process. And you had said at the beginning that many of the individuals that come to you, they're able to go into remission and all the things and they get better. Kind of what's to be expected as we walk down this path of IBD and healing and you're peeling back layers, because many of us are used to just going to the doctor, we get a pill and then our symptoms go down. And like you said, it's like taping the burglar's mouth. And so what can we expect in regards to timeline with the healing that needs to happen?
Well, it really depends. And, you know, obviously, as you know, in the context of what I do in my practice, I'm actually legally bound to not use the words cure, treat, or heal. We can say reverse, improve, mitigate, manage, God forbid, but there's a lot of words we can say. But in the context of what we expect, everyone's different. You know, I had a lady come in, and all of the names, if I use them, they're on the website, they're public. The ones that I don't, obviously for confidentiality reasons, but Karen came in, 52 years old. She was having 30 to 50 bowel movements a day for years. She had IBD, ulcerative colitis, for 16 years. 3 different doctors at the Mayo Clinic. Eat whatever you want. Food has no bearing on this disease. She's tried all the biologics, all the drugs. Life was just destroyed. And she's already quite petite, you know, 5'1" and 95 pounds. And we were working together. She went from like what she would call agonizing pain compared to childbirth. And she has kids. Like, I believe her when she says it. Bowel movements were like childbirth. And she had 30 to 50 a day. Like, just completely destroys your life. In 3 weeks, we had her down to 5 and 8 bowel movements a day, because we very quickly found the root. On the other hand, we have people that might take them 2 months to really make some progress. But I say on average, we say 1 to 2 months of really targeted, like really diligent, hard work for every year that you've had the problem is a fair estimate. But everyone's going to be different. I had a fellow, I just had the pleasure of speaking on TV. There's an international show now called Know the Cause with Doug Kaufman. And so just happened to be one of his friends who I worked with many years ago. It was just last year. He had this disease for many years, 16 years. He was dealing with ulcerative colitis. And in 6 months, he's completely free and clear, clinical, histological remission, CT enterographies, like his scopes are all perfectly clear. You'd never know he's ever had bowel disease. And it only took us 6 months and he had 16 years of problem. So, I mean, everyone's going to vary quite a lot. But, you know, to really answer, people will ask me, because this is a question probably on their mind, well, is this just remission? Is it just temporary? Here's my answer. Inflammation is there for a reason. You are in remission as long as you are controlling the inflammation in the presence of that trigger, that thorn, so to speak. However, I can't use the word cure, but I'll leave it up to you. If you remove the thing your body's been trying to heal you from, and then the symptoms go away, is it healed? Is the disease gone? That's for you to decide.
Totally. So when we're thinking about this, you mentioned at the beginning, we were talking about obesity and inflammation. I'd like to just drive it home a little bit more, because when we're dealing with inflammatory bowel diseases, we're likely also going to see painful joints, being swollen, fatigue, like loss of menstrual cycle, kidney stones. Like, why is this happening? Is it because of the inflammation, or is it because of the thorn, or how do we differentiate?
I love that question. So these are what we call EIMs, or extra intestinal manifestations. Now, there are some common ones we can find through IBD, for example, like something we call PSC, or primary sclerosing cholangitis. So you might find somebody getting like a sclerosis around the liver, gallbladder, or gallstones. We can see some pancreatic issues or enzyme insufficiencies. Gastritis is very common. And basically what we have to look at is why. Imagine you're driving a car and your engine runs out of oil. You burn through all the oil. You haven't changed the oil. You get slug, right? Now the engine's going to start knocking. It's going to start burning. Well, in that engine burning, you're going to start breaking down other parts of your car. I'm clearly not a mechanic, guys, but you get the analogy. And so one thing starts to break down because it can't keep up. Either toxins go out of that system, or other pieces of the machine have to then compensate and do the job they're not supposed to do, right? Like if you don't rotate your tires on a car, then eventually you're going to get this wobble because you've worn down on so much on one place and you've not kept up on the maintenance. And so other things will start to wobble. You get steering wheel wobble, your tires will wear out. And so the same thing happens in the body when we have these issues inside the intestines. Not only do these toxins, like we talked about, exit around the superhighways through the lymphatic system or the bloodstream to circulate, but there are mechanical, functional breakdowns in the body. So picture you have your liver. Really, it's got 500 plus chemical functions. It's responsible for regulating metabolism and storing nutrients and hormone balancing and digestion and, you know, all kinds of stuff that it does. Well, it's got a pecking order. And so if you have all these toxins going through your bloodstream, your liver is filtering 4 liters, give or take, of blood per minute for the average adult. So it's constantly filtering these toxins. Its first priority is going to be poisons. It wants to get rid of poison first. Well, if it's so busy putting its resources towards dealing with poisons, then it's not going to have the resources or the hands to try to take care of hormones, for example. It's not going to be able to balance and regulate those. And so you might have excess estrogen building in the system. Well, now you've also got this excess estrogen because your liver is maybe not doing its job. Let's go back to the gut. If you have toxins building in the gut and bacterial overgrowth, you might have an excess of something we call beta-glucuronidase. Now, it's this enzyme produced in the gut. It's great. It's like a glue. It kind of binds onto things. It binds onto excess estrogens and toxins, can take things out. Well, if you have excess of this and you have poor digestion, it can actually reabsorb. So it absorbs now through the small intestine. It gets circulated back to the liver, back into the bile duct, back into the small intestine, back into the liver, gathering things along the way. Now you have all these excess estrogens being reabsorbed into the body. And so it's not uncommon, for example, for women to come in or men to come in to say have joint issues and low sex drive because their estrogens are elevated, or women who are already fully developed, 20, 30, 40 years old, who now have on their period severe breast tenderness, PMS, cramping, mood swings, anxiety, insomnia, or I've even seen grown women already fully developed whose breasts are still growing because of the excess of estrogen circulating in the system, for example. So we have to look at, what is your body doing? What are the breakdowns? And what is this breakdown process causing in other organs and systems in the body? Well, now you've got acne. Yeah, it's toxins being pushed through your skin, probably from your lymphatics and your liver and your blood, because your body can't detox it through the normal pathways. So it has to go elsewhere, right? Your body is just in a constant state of trying to keep up. It's just trying to manage your symptoms as best it can. But these symptoms we start to develop over time, you go, oh, I got a new diagnosis. No, you don't. You have a new set of symptoms that fit inside of a box where they can give you drugs, but you have new symptoms showing up because your body is breaking down. And this is it screaming at you saying, help me, help me. The medications are what your doctors are giving you to put tape over its mouth. So we have to figure out what is breaking down as a byproduct of this initial strain. And this is how we basically reverse all these diseases at the same time. We're not miracle workers. We just give the body the tools it needs to heal itself, to do what it's been, getting my MERDs all mixed up, to do what it's been designed to do. In my passion, my brain shuts off.
Yeah, mine too. My mouth isn't going quick enough. I really love what I do. So then what's happening in a flare? Because we can go kind of like into remission and then experience a flare and then like the ebbs and flows of the flare situation. What's happening there? If this is a constant cycle of issues, is it a homeostasis thing, or what's happening that we can get better and then worse and up down?
I look at it like your numbing cream is worn off. Let's go back to the thorn in the hand analogy, right? You have something causing inflammation. You put numbing cream on it, either in the form of a medication, like an ointment or a biologic or immunosuppressive, or if you have less things drawing down resources, so you have a little bit more water available, you're resting, you're not inflamed, you're not whatever, or for example, you're now high stressed, right? Your body can use its resources, its water to put out the fire to try to suppress this inflammatory response, to try to re-regulate, because your body doesn't want to be inflamed. It inflames you for a short time in order to put out the fire. But we have these breakthroughs, medications wear off, or high stress draws out more resources, so you're unable to control that flame and it pushes you to an inflamed state. And so a flare is really just a breakthrough of the immune system over-responding, hyper-reacting to something it can't control or that it's trying to control where it's been suppressed, and now it can break through with its resources. That's all a flare really is. It's your immune system ramping up. We go flare, oh, my body's attacking me. Well, your immune system is trying to heal you. And in this short window of time, or God forbid, a long window, I've seen people in flares for weeks and months, their body is heavily responding and heavily reacting to something at this stage because it got out of control. It's no longer able to regulate its inflammatory responses. And then we can go deeper. We got these feedback loops, these negative feedbacks, where the body just keeps going and going and going because we're not giving it the shutoff signal due to microbial imbalances, toxins, nutrient deficiencies, genetics being turned up on the dial versus turned down, triggers like stress or these leaky guts contributing to inflammation. So your immune system is cranked up. We go right back to that Venn diagram of the things causing inflammation and the things contributing to autoimmunity and driving your immune system to turn up like a volume knob versus turn down. That's really what flares are. They're breakthrough immune responses.
Okay. So I want to wrap all of this up into a nice little bow, and this might be challenging to do because it's so individualized, but we talked about toxins, nutrients, the infections, and just the imbalances of the bacteria being some of the root causes behind the inflammation. What are the key things that you've seen? Like, we talked a little bit about diet. We haven't talked a bunch about supplements or lifestyle or other modalities. What are like a couple of things that you've seen to be beneficial when we're dealing with this, of just like steps to do now?
Love that. That's a very good one. So the first thing we have to look at is what I call the five R's of reversing IBD. And so it's something I've recently sort of condensed down. So I'll do my best with it because I have a sheet still because, I just kind of made this for people to understand. The first thing, we have to remove the problem, remove the thorn, right? We have to look at that thorn is there. So it's reacting for a reason, if we can remove that. But so many people, for example, are toxic. So they want to jump, say their thorn is mold. Oh, I want to detox the mold. Well, picture you've got two different cups, right? You've got a red cup or a yellow cup and a blue cup for analogy's sake here. The yellow cup is all your toxins building in the body. That's what's developing in the cellular tissue, in the nervous tissue, in the fat cells. It's developing inside of your gut from microbes and candida. These are all the toxins accumulating. In the blue cup is your detox pathways, your liver, your lymphs, your skin, your kidneys, your gut, right? All these things trying to get rid of junk. And so what we want to do is detox our yellow cup. So let's get rid of the toxins. Well, your detoxing cup, your blue cup, is already full. And so we try to empty the yellow cup into the blue cup and it overflows. And this is where we get these negative reactions. We call a Herxheimer reaction, for example. You get the flu, you get these mood swings, you get insomnia, joint pain, something worsens, flare up because you're moving too quickly. You can't empty these cups into each other. You have to empty that blue detoxing cup, empty the liver, right? Detoxify the body before you can remove by emptying that yellow cup to exit the body. And so it is steps, layers, in processes. So the number one thing, we have to detox and remove these problems. We have to, of course, figure out what they are. And then we can start going into looking at other issues that we're now dealing with. Maybe we have to rebuild the microbiome that's been damaged. We might have to repair the tissues, right? We have to, of course, replenish or restore your nutrients that have been lacking because you've been burned through so much. And of course, rejuvenate the immune system. Now, an immune system is imbalanced when it's in autoimmune or in hyper states of hyperreactivity like a flare. It's imbalanced. And so what we have to do is rebalance it, which is rejuvenation. We hear it all the time about boosting our immune system. Well, if you're imbalanced, you're boosting the imbalance. You're causing these branches to extend themselves even further. Rejuvenation brings them back to balance. And that can be antioxidants and nutrients and rest and stress management and food and managing inflammation and so many things. But like you said, it's so individualized. And so there's a lot of steps and stages and processes to getting somebody healthy to reverse this disease, but it's very much reversible. I've debunked this now. Like I said, I lecture for Priority Health Academy. It's an online functional medicine academy where medical doctors want to learn functional medicine. I lecture on reversal IBD. I've had the pleasure of talking about this on international television with Doug Kaufman on Know the Cause just 2-3 weeks ago in Texas, talking about the reversal of this disease. And we actually his buddy, Louis, we talked about with 16 years of IBD, came out, was on the show with us to talk about this. Like, it can be done. And so my encouragement, guys, is that if you've been told it's genetic, it's autoimmune, there's nothing we can do, medications and surgery are your only option, it doesn't have to be that way. There's so much more that can be done if we just look outside of what you've been told so far. And I've been hated on when I first came public with this stuff. I was like, we're so successful. I brought it to the public. And was like, I put a post on Facebook. I was like, I believe 9 out of 10 cases of ulcerative colitis can be reversed. That got brought to Reddit. Reddit blew up. I got harassed. I got threatened. I had people hating on me. Like, it was crazy by changing the paradigm and saying there might be hope. And I think that comes from a place of being stuck, of feeling hopeless, and even acceptance of the disease. In many cases, make it your identity. Like, I'm a colitis warrior. We can do this together. It's community. And then we take that from you, and it can be really rattling. But the reality is you don't have to live with this disease anymore. Medicine just will tell you otherwise. And so there are options for sure.
It's like the time that I made pancakes with pork rinds. And that was my coming out to my vegan community of, I'm eating a ketogenic diet. And I literally received death threats. And like, I mean, that's a scary place to be. You're just like, but I swear to you, this is life changing. Listen. But over time, you just develop that following that wants to hear what you want to hear. And they're ready to heal. And that is just such an encouragement. Can you tell us where we can learn from you? You're such a good educator. Where can we learn from you? Where can we connect with you? Give us all the details about that.
Absolutely. So we're actually working on a brand new project. By the time this episode comes out, it's going to be live. There's a new platform called Skool, S-K-O-O-L, which we're very excited about. We have a new group we're starting called Reversing Crohn's and Colitis Naturally. And this is an online community. It's like the perfect blend between like a Facebook group, for example, and a coaching program. And we're bringing in all kinds of guests as this group is now growing. We're bringing back some famous guests I've had on my podcast, like Stephen Gundry, and all kinds to come in and actually talk with our guests and our members of this community. There's courses and done for you programs and meal plans, like a walkthroughs. We will help you find the root. Like, I've been working on this, Leanne, for years to try to find something that will work for the general population. But all that information, how to work with us directly in small groups or largely through our Skool community, which we now have released, you can find all that information at gutsolution.ca. That's all singular, gutsolution.ca. All of your hopes and dreams can be answered and found there.
Yes. And we didn't even get to talk about the fact that we're two Calgarians, which is just the coolest thing that we get to chat with each other. When you said .ca, I'm like, right, of course, you're Canadian.
And we happen to share the same podcast editor. So
yeah, exactly. Exactly. Oh, thank you so much for coming on the show today, Josh. This is just so such an encouragement. And I hope that it will help many of the listeners that just feel discouraged. And that's really why we do what we do. So thanks for coming on. And I'll be sure to include all the links that you just shared in the show notes today. So again, thank you for coming on.
It's been a pleasure. And thank you so much for having me and just giving me a platform to share hope to what really is a debilitating and devastating disease.
I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Josh today. You can find all the links in the show notes, including his program on Skool to help reverse Crohn's and colitis. Definitely check that out if you're dealing with inflammation, and such a great community of individuals with just loads of information. I love that we live in a world where we can educate ourselves and change the way our body reacts to situations. So enjoy that, and I will see you back here for another episode of the Keto Diet Podcast. See you next Tuesday. Thanks for listening. Join us next Tuesday for another episode of the Keto Diet Podcast. Looking for more resources? Go to healthfulpursuit.com for keto meal plans, weight loss programs, low carb recipes, and oodles of free resources to get you going. The Keto Diet Podcast, including show notes and links, provides information in respect to healthy living, recipes, nutrition, and diet, and is intended for informational purposes only. The information provided is not a substitute for medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment, nor is it to be construed as such. We cannot guarantee that the information provided on the Keto Diet Podcast reflects the most up-to-date medical research. Information is provided without any representation or warranties of any kind. Please consult a qualified health provider with any questions you may have regarding your health and nutrition program.